Welcome to Talk Eastern Europe. My name is Adam Reichert.
And my name is Maciek Makulski.
And this is episode 26 of the podcast. This episode is going to look at the role of disinformation and anti-Western narratives in the country of Georgia. It's part of our series of podcast episodes, which is sponsored by the Polish Embassy in Georgia. As part of their NATO Contact Point Embassy program. Just a reminder that the opinions in the podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the Polish Embassy in Tbilisi, as well as the Polish Ministry of Foreign Affairs or NATO. But having that out of the way, we are very excited to have you with us. And Maciek, maybe talk a little bit more about what's in store for us today.
Sure. Just quick reminder, Adam, before we move further, as our usual information for our listeners, you can follow us on you can join to our Facebook group. This is a special group devoted to this podcast, where we try to develop our discussion on the topics we discuss here. So everyone who is interested, you can find us on Facebook. The name of the group is Talk Eastern Europe Podcast. And also, I would like to remind that everyone who is interested in supporting us financially can do it by Patreon page, where you can find a lot of different levels of support, and for each level we prepared some rewards, so everyone interested in that will find a link below this episode.
Yeah, and Maciek, if I may, just I want to thank so far everybody who not only is supporting us on the Patreon page, and I'll give the shout out in a moment, as is our standard procedure, but I do want to thank those also on the Facebook page, because we've had some very excellent input and feedback lately, and some ideas for upcoming topics and guests, as well as feedback on the podcast in general. So thank you all for your engagement, and please do feel free to drop us a line on Facebook. It's, as Maciek said, facebook.com/groups/talkeasterneurope.
Yeah, so thank you all for your feedback and all support so far.
Yeah, and so let me also give a shout out to those who are our patrons on our Patreon page. We're really glad to have them with us. David, Dennis, Elizabeth, Erica, Jason, Janusz, Caitlin, Mark, Pierre, Sophia, Stephanie, Steve, and Wilhelm. These are our 13 active patrons who have supported us in the podcast. And our goal right now, Maciek, is to get 20 supporters by January 2020. I think it's something we can do, and I really hope that our listeners out there will consider heading over to our Patreon page. And as Maciek said, there are some extra benefits. If you give $10 a month or more, you can get free access to New Eastern Europe content, which is I think a pretty good benefit, considering we just released a new issue of New Eastern Europe.
So please check it out, and again, thanks. So recently, we were focused strongly on Georgia, as we continue this special Georgian series about security in Black Sea region. But in fact, it is very hot time in Eastern Europe. In other countries, a lot of important issues are taking place or took place recently. So Adam, maybe we should bring some the most important news from the region. Yeah,
I mean, it's a lot happening. Today we're recording the podcast. It's December 9th, so it is the meeting of the Normandy format, which hasn't taken place for quite some time. For those of you who don't know what the Normandy format is, it is the peace talk format or framework for the conflict in eastern Ukraine, in Donbass. And the members of the format are Germany, France, as well as Russia and Ukraine. Those are the main four main members. And the peace and the talks are taking place in Paris. So Macron is hosting the talks, and the participation is with the heads of state. So Putin and Zelensky, I think, are meeting for the first time face to face. Really interested to see what's going to happen there, Maciek. I don't know really what we can predict, and I think a lot of people are very cautious. Zelensky, as you know, we talked about this on the podcast earlier. He campaigned on the issue of bringing peace to Ukraine and into the conflict in Donbass, and this may be one of the steps, but we don't know exactly how far he's willing to go. And we do have a text on our New Eastern Europe website for those who are interested to check out. Taras Kujel recently wrote an op-ed on what is the price of peace and is it worth it for Ukraine. So that's, I think, the big question. We're still watching closely what's going to happen there.
True. I think one thing to add here, what is important from my perspective, is that Zelensky said that elections in Donbass may take place only after Russian and or all troops will withdraw from the region, and then the elections can happen. But
how that will ever take place, to see
that's that's one point. But Minsk agreement was about that before any troops will be withdrawn, first the election should take place. So there is even like a formal disagreement. Yeah,
so it's a catch 22. Yeah, no elections until troops pull out, and no troops can't pull out until there's elections. So that is definitely a loop. We will see how that goes, and we're watching closely. I think we plan to have some commentary on the website. I'm sure we'll have a podcast about Donbass coming up.
And
shortly.
Also, what is important, there was some kind of a protest, or maybe not a protest in Kiev, but a lot of people gather in the center of Kiev just to remind President that he shouldn't go too far in discussing these things with Russians. So people simply will not agree for solution of this Donbass conflict, where the price will be too high for Ukraine.
Right. I think a lot of worry also is what is the position of Germany and France in this. With Macron especially, it's kind of get a sense that he's trying to push peace at any cost or at any price, really. He wants to just kind of get this over with and focus again on rebuilding relations with Russia. And that's, I think this is also a big challenge and something that we should be keeping an eye on.
Yeah. And maybe
another big topic that was taking place over the weekend, and we had some coverage on that as well, is the discussion between Belarus's president Alexander Lukashenko and
special
the Russian
meeting
president.
Of heads of state in Sochi, Russia.
Yes, in Sochi in Russia to discuss the full integration of Belarus into Russia. There was a lot of concerns going into it. And in Minsk, there were also a lot of protests, protest against the integration, full integration of Belarus into the Russian Federation.
But to my knowledge, the protest was not that big. Yeah, it was around 1,000 people.
Maybe not so large, but I think they were quite loud, I would say, at least from the media perspective.
Yeah, especially if we discuss Belarus, it's not common as in Ukraine that people go out to streets and protest.
True. That's true. Yeah. So, it was very interesting because I think there were a lot of commentaries that were saying that there was some leaked documents that came out last week ahead of this meeting that basically showed that Belarus would sign its integration, and this was a roadmap for them to implement finally the union state. And in the end, it really ended up not producing anything. I think they're scheduled to meet again sometime later this month.
20 December.
Yeah.
20
yeah.
December. Yeah, this is interesting because from the economic point of view, Belarus is highly dependent on Russia, and we should remember that The price for gas for next year for Belarus is still being negotiated. So this is one of the mean how Russia put pressure, stronger True. Pressure on That's right. Belarus. So from this context, it's really interesting that Russia still did not simply made Belarus and Lukashenko for the greater integration, as you said.
Yep. So we're keeping an eye on this, and I think I recommend that our listeners check out our webpage at neweasterneurope.eu, as well as we'll plan to cover these issues as well in the podcast. So it's a lot going on, but maybe now would be a good time, Maciek, to introduce our main topic of the podcast, which is your interview with Martha Ardashelia from Georgia, Sova News.
Yeah, Sova News, Sova Dat News.
Sova Dat News, yes.
Let's call it correctly, is a relatively new Russian language media about Georgia, not only about politics, also about society and culture. And this is a project supported by European Endowment for Democracy, which is interesting because there is a lot of Russian language media sources available in Georgia, but they very often present Russian point of view, which is not convenient, to softly saying, for Georgia. So I think Martha Ardashelia runs a very important project. That's first thing, and she's also a good expert on media topics, mm-hmm. which is interested for us here, because, as you said in the beginning, this episode is also part of our special Georgian series about security in the Black Sea region. So today we will cover and we will discuss with Martha one of the most important dimension of security in recent years, I would say, which is connected with disinformation and countering disinformation. Yeah. And just as a reminder for our listeners, in earlier this year we had an interesting conversation with Jakub Kaleński here at Talkistan Europe about disinformation, like in general. I think this is like we discussed some fundamentals about this problem, about this issue, also what are the most common tools to tackle disinformation. So if someone needs a kind of a background, you can easily find this episode on our list.
Yeah.
And today we will, I think, go a little bit further and discuss some issues in more detail.
And this is obviously a topic that so many countries are dealing with. We see the United States, the UK, who also have elections this week. I think it was very interesting. I mean, they will have an impact on
True.
On geopolitics and our region as well. And but the role that Russia plays in terms of disinformation in these different countries is something that we can all relate to. And Georgia's particularly interesting case because what you talk with you, I don't want to give a lot away, but what you, the topics that you talk about with Martha, I found really interesting because her news service is in Russian language, and she talks a lot about Russian language services in Georgia. But in fact, the Russian speakers in Georgia is an interesting group, because that is a group that is slowly disappearing or going away. You have a lot of minority groups like Abkhazians and different minorities that are Russian speakers, and then you have a lot of older people from the Soviet who remember the Soviet times, who had Russian in school and growing up, it was their official language during the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. But you have a lot of the new young people and who are not learning Russian. So it's very interesting that who her audience is and who she's trying to address in her media project.
Yeah, I was also thinking about that. I think we should also remember that this disinformation campaigns led by or initiated by Russia is only one of the tool in the spectrum of tools Russia uses in the region when we talk about not hard power maybe but soft power. And I think that
and
by doing
much
that,
maybe we should one thing I like to clarify sometimes is that we say Russia but we actually mean like you know Kremlin and the regime because
true
it is important and I was reminded this when we had a couple episodes back when I interviewed Yegor Kuroptsev, who is Russian in Georgia, in Tbilisi. He's running the Free Russia Foundation. He reminded me it's very important to make this distinction between Kremlin policy and Russia and generally Russia.
And Russians. Mm-hmm. True. That's a good point. So I think that what Russia does also in Georgia and probably in Southern Caucasus in general is also related to you know to the Orthodox world that Russia tries to influence Georgians those Georgians who are more conservative and can express more anti-Western attitudes or narrative or can be like exposed to that
Exactly, and
In this context, the size of the Russian speakers in Georgia is not that important, or it is important, but it's not a critical factor here because Russia appeals to the whole Georgia society, I would say.
Yes, and I think this is what Marta kind of points out as well, is that the point is looking at not just promoting a pro-Russian narrative. In fact, a lot of the propaganda doesn't promote any sort of pro-Russian narrative. It's actually promoting anti-Western narratives and encouraging or addressing this more conservative elements in a society like Georgia to be very, very cautious or even like to become anti-European. Of course, through the lens of its propaganda and based on, of course, a lot of nonsense.
So Russia is promoted like indirectly,
exactly,
as opposition to the West.
Yeah. Right. Okay, so that's I think a pretty good introduction. Maybe now we'll move on to your interview with Marta Ardashelia.
Sure. And with me is Marta Ardashelia, co-founder and editor-in-chief of Sova.news website. And actually, because before we start our main part of the discussion, which will be about anti-EU narratives in Georgia, and I hope also we will touch a little bit how Russia conducts disinformation campaigns in Georgia, I would like to ask you about this project launched by you and run by you, Sova.news, because it sounds to me like a media project, but what is it?
Hello, thank you for having me. First of all, Sova News, it's a Russian language media. I have to underline that it's only one independent Russian language media about Georgia and in Georgia. And when we decided to create such media outlet, the precondition was the situation in our country with misinformation and fakes coming from Russia. And as you know, in Georgia, we have two occupied regions by Russia. It's also Ossetia and Abkhazia. And the population are mostly Russian speakers. And they're receiving all information from Russian state media outlets. And also, Georgia is populated with ethnic minorities who are also mostly Russian speakers. So we decided to create some information outlet for these people to provide them with fair, objective journalism and to give them an information what is going on in Georgia without any political or propaganda filter, of course. And then when we launch it, we've seen that not only Georgians are really interested with our content, but also people from Russia, people from Ukraine, Armenia, Azerbaijan, and other European countries. So it means that Russian-speaking population globally, all over the world, has a lack of fair information, objective information that they trust, and these people are keen to receive such an information from different media outlets. So now it's more than 3 years that Sova is operating as an independent media. We're still a small media outlet, but we see how the audience is growing day by day. And it shows this trend that Russian-speaking people really need a fair, objective, quality media outlet to get an information about situations going all over the globe.
Thank you for that. I think you do an important job to increase what is called resilience. I think we will touch this issue maybe in the further part of our interview, but let's now delve into that and let's focus on this main topic of our discussion, which is again anti-EU narratives in Georgia. And frankly, I know personally Georgians, especially young generation, as a very pro-European society. So maybe let's first define what attitudes towards the European Union and the West in general are present in Georgia's society.
Georgian society, majority of Georgian society is pro-European and pro-European values. But now in our country we have such trend that anti-European forces are becoming more influencer. So this is the people who are working on weaknesses of Georgian society, on myths that Georgian society has and really manipulated with it. Of course, it's tradition. Of course, it's Russian occupation and fearness of another war. Of course, it's NATO integration issue. As you know, Georgia has conducted the referendum when the majority, 70% of Georgians, voted for NATO. So this narrative has a goal to change this approach of Georgian people. Now still, they are still marginals in Georgian society, but we can see how day by day there is some changes in public opinion polls. And we also can see that in Georgian parliament we have openly pro-Russian party who are promoting anti-Western values, who are promoting Georgian neutrality toward NATO, and who are promoting conducting negotiations in a way of being quiet, not to disturb like big neighbors. So this is a trend, and the thing how Russia is working in Georgia, that after 2008 war with Russian, Georgians has this consensus that Russia is an enemy for our country, but and Georgian government switched off Russian TV channels because they conducted openly propaganda. But Russia, back to Georgia, they created Georgian language medias, variety and different variety of Georgian language media outlets, and promoting anti-Western narrative with this media outlet. So there is a bunch of small, not really influential media outlets in Georgia working on spreading misinformation and propaganda. But you can never identify the owner, the where funding comes from. But with the narrative and with the messages they are spreading, you can identify the character of this media outlet. And this is the main challenge today for Georgian society, because people are reading some piece of information, if we can call it information, in Georgian language. It could be different kind of messages, like the most popular before visa-free regime with EU was that Italy forbid to baptize kids. And you know that Georgia is a very religious Orthodox country, and people were getting angry how Italy could make this ban. So it was, of course, misinformation. And it was spreaded by such trolls and small outlets. And people who really don't have any possibility to check, don't have any skills to check or to think how to check, they take it as it is and then spread and then share, and with their social media, with the word of mouth. And of course, in such small countries, it works quite good, and Russia really know that it works quite good. So what I want to say now is that after 2008 war, Russia changed its strategy and started to conduct their propaganda not in Russian language as it was before, but in Georgian. And of course, now it can reach like potentially all Georgians in our country.
Okay. Just to make it crystal clear, let's try to like list. By when you say they, you mean mainly groups of people, I guess, or who run pro-Russian narrative media available especially in internet. So these are social media. Are there any other actors, like you mentioned that there are political parties who openly support Russia? Are there anyone else who should be added to that list?
So we have mostly three actors. It's politicians, like those pro-Russian parties that we have in parliament and outside of parliament. We have organizations financed by Russia. They're not that influence. They don't have such influence as like pro-Western or other organizations in Georgia, but still they have their audience and they are working with them. And the third part is the media that I have mentioned before, and also TV channels. We have one openly pro-Russian TV channels, which belongs to the party who is in a parliament that I have mentioned, and also some Russian narrative are kind of provided by different media outlets, which maybe are doing it because of lack of knowledge or lack of skills or information, and they just are the victims of this propaganda and fake news that Russia is spreading in Georgia. So this is three actors, and also in media, Russia has like Russian influence. We can see in newspapers, the biggest newspaper in Georgia, which is also providing anti-Western narrative and anti-Western rhetoric to the audience.
And who is the owner of this newspaper?
We don't really know. The main problem with such medias are that we don't know who is behind these outlets, because their work really untransparent. They don't have an open. They're not even registered in Georgia. They don't have the accounts that we can check who transferred the money. But according to several investigations that Sova News has conducted, these people are somehow connected with businessmen from Russia, like origin Georgians, and they have some ties with officials in Russia. So if you dig in, you can find some connection, but no documents for it, because they know how to work in a way.
Okay, and let's clarify also this language issue, because it was very interesting what you have said. when Russia started to spread disinformation in Georgian language, as you said, by doing so, it can reach like the whole society. But you decided to launch your website in Russian, so it means that still this is like a more critical issue to have this kind of countermeasure provided in Russian. And why is that? How popular Russia media, maybe in general, are popular amongst Georgians? Is it similar like in other Eastern European countries that Russia TV probably provides better quality content than Georgian's media? I would like to, you know, dig a little bit more about this language issue. Yeah.
So according to the last polls, Russian TV stations are the most watchable in Georgia. So that you mentioned all these TV shows, the entertainment segment are really popular in Georgia. And of course, we know that TV audience are older audience. So it is a people from with a Soviet past. So the generation who used to live in Soviet Union, they are used to watch Russian language media and they still act in this way. And of course, maybe they didn't watch the newscasts from Russian TV, but when you see ordinary TV show on Russian TV, you can also clearly see the messages they provide from their entertainment shows also. And we know that the Russian propaganda are not only in news or in politics, but also in all segments. And that's why Russia is so powerful in this way. So, of course, people in Georgia are watching Russian TV as in other post-Soviet countries, unfortunately watching. Young generation are, of course, not in the statistics. Young generation are mostly in English language media, in Georgian language media. But still, in both segments, we have a huge problem of critical thinking and, as we call it, media literacy. Because people still, even in Georgia, because we have more than 10 years of Russian propaganda and fakes problem, even from the first day of 2008 war, when they spread the misinformation and changed the angle of this war with the message who starts the war, and they playing with it till today very successfully, we have this problem all this time. But still the audience couldn't recognize this problem. They are not thinking about their own responsibility, and they don't really care about the information routine that they are making all day long. So yes, we have such problem. Why Russian? Why we decided to start the media outlet in Russian language? First of all, because we have such an expertise. Me and my friends who are working on Sova, we are doing Russian language journalism for years, and when the Sputnik entered to Georgia, they launched a really powerful media outlet because Sputnik has a lot of money. And they're playing with the Georgian values and Georgian proud, like they published the articles, the best Georgian piano player in the world, an interview with them, and find such topics that are really could be really interesting to every single Georgian person all over the world, and people starting to share it. And we see that they're mostly working with and promoting such cultural stories to attract Georgian audience. And you know, all this misinformation game is like a sandwich. So you put misinformation in the middle of two very attractive stories that that you give to your audience. And of course, they kind of catch the Georgian audience with this very simple trick. And we've decided that maybe we can create some alternative information for the people who are reading in Russian language, but and give them of course, the success stories, but also give them the political, cultural, and economical stories about Georgia and region. And we see that with a very, very limited fundings, because in the very beginning it was like an adventure. Okay, let's do it like this. And we see that people are really reading it, people are really interested in it, and we see that this niche that Russia decided to have, it's still free, even with Sova News in Georgia. And I think that media market in Georgia needs to create more media outlets like this, small multiply actors, because you've never create the media like Sputnik, and maybe you don't want to do it, I'm pretty sure, but you can create small or middle media outlets, multiply, and just to create this agenda, information agenda, which is free from Kremlin, which is free from any kind of propaganda and misinformation.
I see your project is a grassroots initiative, and I in general know that Georgian non-governmental sector is vivid, but do you feel any support from the state, from the authorities?
We really are mad about keep our independence from any kind of players. So we don't want any support, or we don't want any kind of, confrontation with any side. We're just journalists. We're doing our job. We want to cover issues as they are. We are not promoting anti-Russian messages or anti-Russian narratives. No, we just want to tell people what's going on in Georgia, what's going on in our neighbor countries, how Russia acting with Georgia, and provide them with facts. And people are really like it, because we have a huge audience from Abkhazia, and this is the part of Georgia which is now closed from from the rest of the country with the wall that Russian soldiers were building during all these years. And even not physically there in other part of this wall, other side of this wall, but also with the information, Russia blocked all Georgian TV stations in this territory. You couldn't call from Tbilisi to Suhumi with ordinary Georgian mobile network, because it's also blocked. So what we see with Sova News, that people from Abkhazia, original Abkhazians, who used to have this hate speech toward ethnic Georgians, they're reading Sova, and they're discussing issues that we raise, not because it's another anti-Russian or anti-Abkhazian media outlet, but because we just provide them with the facts and information, and they just really want to know what's going on in Tbilisi, what's going on in other part of Georgia, because it's really a vital part of their lives. So even these people are really interesting to have such an information, and that's what we really want, just to do our job. And I'm happy that we can afford it.
I think it's the best approach you can have. You have mentioned about several tools that Russia uses in general when conducts disinformation campaigns, as Russia TV or Sputnik. I would like to go a little more further and ask about narratives that Russia uses, and if there is any specific tactic of using this kind of narratives, or even specific narrative used specifically in Georgia, that is something what you've seen that Russia is playing out only in Georgia, or no, it's rather on as in other countries.
Of course, there is one trick that Russia used in other countries also. It's and Russia, of course, realized that in Georgia it has an enemy status, despite of positions of concrete or separate people or parts of society. It's a consensus in countries that Russia occupied Abkhazia and South Ossetia, and it's not good. But at the same time, Russia, and of course Russia, realized that they not promoting themselves as a country with whom Georgia should be. They're quite wise for it. So they promote the idea that, yes, maybe we are not the best guys in the world, but look at the Western countries and imagine what they could do with your traditional values, what they could do with your religion, or what they could do with your kids. And it really works. So Russia promotes the idea of intolerance. Russia, you know, discredited the idea of human rights. They promote from their actors, they promote the hate speech toward ethnic minorities, toward even toward Iran and Turkey, and create this icon of enemy like an Muslim countries who are ready to, you know, attack Georgia in some moment in the future. So Russia worked with these narratives very successfully, and these pro-Russian political parties promote this idea. They are not promoting Russia as it is, but they promoting the anti-Western messages and speaking to older generation. Do you remember how do you live in the Soviet Union? You have your identity.
So nostalgia.
Yes. So, yes, and what you have now, and of course it works for some part of Georgian society. But even it's not, so it's one part of the story. But the second part, that when we were speaking to even veterans of Second World War in Georgia, and these people, society considers them as very nostalgic towards Soviet Union and toward Russia and stuff. And we were asking 10 of them to tell us what they are thinking about Russian policy nowadays in Georgia. The thing was, all of them, like people from 80 to 85, were criticizing Russia. And of course, it is the thing also. It's not... it's a very complex issue. You couldn't say that Georgian society, elder generation, are mostly targeted because they... No. But of course, we have some parts of society, and of course, they're influenced by Russia.
Interesting. And maybe let's try to think a little bit about what are the countermeasures available. So I perceive now Sova.News News as one of such tools that is available in Georgia. But how do you think about resilience and countering disinformation in general? Like, what arsenal we have to counter it?
I think that we have had to speak about short-term and long-term perspectives. In the short term, of course, I think that this is the topic when government officials should be involved very actively. So they should promote this idea of being aware of being the victim of misinformation and propaganda, and raise the issue and make it in an agenda of Georgian society. Just make people to think, because still in our country, the main stakeholders are government officials. Of course, some international organizations, some NGOs conducting campaigns to promote media literacy, but it's not enough. And in a countries like Georgia, you need to work with people directly, especially with people who don't have an access to internet or to those who have. So you need this campaign in every single level, from my grandmother to my son. And this is the thing. And of course, the another, maybe two, could be the freedom of media, because if you want to have a real progress in such way, you have to have the media who is working with all those journalism standards that we are considered to be a quality journalism, because quality journalists are not spreading misinformation or fakes, and people should somehow has this understanding then this is a media and this is a propaganda. So of course I think that the first idea is an informational campaign from all actors in society and providing this fair and quality information to society, and people should have a easy access to it. It shouldn't be like difficult fact-checking, very analytical pieces. It shouldn't be. People don't really like it. They are not reading it.
They don't have time for it.
They don't have time for it. They don't have, they don't have time for it, and they want just to have fun, just to read some nice pieces and just to go and to live their own lives. So we have to think how make it really interesting, how catch them with all these ideas, because it's vital for Georgian society. It's vital for Georgian independence, I think, in society. It's vital.
And now on political note, maybe I think it will be the last question, but I'm thinking now about the future of Eastern Partnership, and as we know, Georgia is that country who made a lot of efforts to be closer to the EU. We have DCFTA signed, we have association agreement, we have visa-free regime, which I think are very important accomplishments. But there is a question like, what next? And especially when the EU does not put membership perspective on the table, like clearly. And I think that should we be afraid of that if there is no more active role of the EU and another offer from the EU side, then is Georgia in danger that these pro-Russian narratives will be more effective, maybe?
Yes, there is such danger. And now we have such a discussion that could we be so frustrated as Turkey is and stuff like this. But Georgian, maybe part of Georgian society has such understanding that cooperation with EU and NATO is the only way to keep your sovereignty. But at the same time, you need more benefits from it. And of course, Georgia, if you compare Georgia with other post-Soviet countries, you feel the difference. But now Georgians take it for granted. And that's because we really want such changes, that because we really feel that we can be as other European countries.
Are they ready to take the responsibility for these changes as well?
Mm-hmm. And you know, all this, maybe you know how Georgia was look like 20 years ago. So I think these people were really working hard to be the part of EU family. And I think they analyze what it should be, because it wasn't like in 1 minute we made all these changes. And yes, Georgian society were a bit frustrated, especially because of activating this Russian propaganda and Russian misinformation and all these narratives that we were talking about. But at the same time, when Georgia has received visa-free, It was the day when all society again believed that, wow, so we can do it, we can get some really important benefit from EU, and they feel that we deserve it and stuff. So it was really positive. And of course, membership, it's a big deal, and people in Georgia analyzed it. But I think that we Georgia still has this potential to be the part of this this part of the world, because again, if you go to other countries and if and then visit to Georgia, you really feel that maybe Soviet Union is not here at all. But still, of course, we have a lot of problem with poverty, with human rights, and it is an ongoing process. And I really like that now the people, it's like open discussion again around all these problems, and we even have tough discussions in parliament, we even have tough discussions in society, but I think all these things will help Georgia to overcome the problem, and maybe we've never become the part of European Union, but this lifestyle, this attitude to rule of law, and this, you know, everyday routine and the way of thinking that we have now, our generation, the future generation, the thing how they're approaching to you know, life issues, they're not the part of this area, they're not anymore the part of post-Soviet area. It's a new generation, it's a very open-minded Western generation that I really love to see in my country.
And I think it's a great conclusion of our discussion. I would like to thank you, Marta, to help us paint this complex picture of how Russia uses media and other tools to misinform society, not only in Georgia, also beyond the region. And also to share your insights about the current state of Georgian society. So thank you very much for joining us at Talk Eastern Europe, and good luck with Sova.News News project.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
And that was Maciek's interview with Marta Adeshelia, who is the head of Sova News, Sova.News in Tbilisi, Georgia, a Russian language media outlet. And that is all we have prepared for our episode today. Just a reminder that we were co-sponsored by the Polish Embassy in Tbilisi. We're very grateful for their support and for their ongoing support of the podcast. We have, I think, two more episodes coming in this special series, and I do hope that that you do enjoy the series and you look forward to the remaining episodes.
Yep, in the last episode, I think, of this short series, we will discuss the results of special NATO meeting.
Yes.
Which took place a few days ago.
That's right.
Yeah, so stay tuned for that, and that's all what we have for you this time.
Yep. So thanks again for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you very much.
Don't forget to check us out on Facebook, Twitter, and our Patreon page. Looking forward to having you join us next time.
Until next time.
Bye.